Hi, I'm Rich.
And I'm Jimmy.
And you're listening to
Rich and Jimmy Watch a Film.
Yes, you are, you lucky, lucky people.
Hello there. Doing a creepy little wave to the YouTube camera.
Hello, YouTube camera. It's a great start. This is going to be...
Cramra.
Good day, look at my cramra. So, Jimmy, we're here again in my front room. We've just eaten our dinner, which we don't need to talk about anymore because that section's now gone.
Worth mentioning it was delicious, but that's it.
Yeah, yummy. So let's crack straight on. We're talking about this movie that we're going to watch tonight.
Movie.
So tonight we are watching the film Ghost Stories.
Ooh, spooky.
That is the appropriate noise. This was so much easier the other day after a bottle of Jack Daniels.
it's just flowing out your thing. But probably things shooting out of both ends after all that JD, to be fair.
Oh, you have to lower the tone, don't you, you absolute fool. Jimmy Long, have you seen this film before?
I have, mate, on your recommendation, as a matter of fact.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, you recommended it to me a little while back and I checked it out and I've seen it several times since then.
Are you a fan?
Yeah. It's very good. One of the better horror films I've seen in a long, old time.
So, for those of you that don't know Ghost Stories, it is originally a theatre play.
I was gonna ask you that. I was going to double check. Yeah, it was a play originally, wasn't
it? Yeah, so I saw it when it first was written in the Lyric Hammersmith, and I have to say, it's mind-bendingly scary on stage.
Yeah.
Like, nothing I've seen before. If you YouTube the trailer, they've just got a night vision camera on the audience, and people are literally cowering and screaming. Honestly, terrifying.
And you're not a man that scares easy either. You're a bit of a horror fan, so that must have been very
Yeah, but there's
very
something
effective.
About live horror. Yeah. Just absolutely does stuff.
It's three-dimensional. It's
Jimmy, help me.
I can't talk. I was going to say, it's three-dimensional. Sorry, I was going to see where you were going with that. But yeah, it's three-dimensional in it. You're in the room. You're almost a part of it as well. And it's the tension of a room full of, say, 200 other people as well. That rising fear, like, you can feel that it's a bit, like, contagious, I guess,
think,
isn't it?
Rising fear is exactly why this is so scary, because it starts off very slow. And it's all about, obviously, three ghost stories.
Yeah.
But also, it was written by... it's a collaboration between the people that did League of Gentlemen. So that's, you know, League of Gentlemen?
Just through you. I've never seen it, but I know you're a big fan.
So it's quite sort of messed up. It's, you know, slightly unhinged. And also the chap that does a lot of Derren Brown stuff. So it's a lot of psychological stuff as well.
Yep.
And you put both of that on stage and bang, you've got yourself a hit, motherfucker.
So the lead actor in this is also... He was the writer as well, wasn't he? His name escapes
Andy
me.
Andy Nyman.
Yes, thank you. Yeah, and he was the writer of the play as well.
I keep tickling your feet there.
Yeah, little footsies under the table.
From what I remember, he wrote it, but he starred... When we first saw it at the Lyric, I'm sure it was him that plays the main character, and then he plays it again in... the movie. And I was a little bit worried because I have such a love for the theatre show. Oh, what are they called? Theatre shows. Plays. I work in a theatre and I don't even know the answer to that.
The things that you do for a job, mate.
Yeah, that's it. The moving people on the boxes. So I've got such love for the play that when they announced that they were going to make it into a film, I was a little bit like... Because you could take a film and turn it into a play.
Yeah,
because visually it's already there, but I think if you set a play in a film, it's harder. They did it, and they did it very, very well.
Yeah, and having that, then you've lost that thing of the audience and the things that we were just talking about. Once that's all taken away, if it's going to diminish, but I've never seen the show, but I know that the film is very bloody good. So I don't think they lost too much in the transfer over. In the transfer of mediums, I don't think they lost much at all.
I think they also cast the film really well.
Yeah, man.
It's got Martin Freeman in it, who, in my eyes, can't do a foot wrong.
Nah,
he's brilliant.
He's awesome. And just from everything you hear as well, he's one of them people who actually just seems like a really decent bloke as well, like, in real life.
Yeah, I heard that he doesn't like being approached in the street and he can be quite grumpy about it. But
I could understand that.
But I'm like, yeah, great. Like if I'm walking down to Sainsbury's and someone comes up to me, I'm like, leave me alone. Like,
I actually
just listen to me on the podcast. You don't need to approach me in the street.
I actually met a famous person last night at a gig and just enjoyed the show with them and didn't like go up and approach it. And we had a really nice little moment together.
Can we try and guess who it is?
Yeah, go for it.
Is it Meryl Streep?
No.
How many guesses do I get? Because this could be a very long
episode.
Any clues?
Yeah.
Film star?
Television. He had a very successful comedy duo that was very surreal comedy in sort of the 2000s. English.
Adrian Edmondson.
No. Howard Moon and...
It was one of the Bushes.
It was Noel Fielding.
I like him.
Yeah.
He's very good on Bake Off.
So he was at the show last night. There was a blues singer from Australia that we went to go see, and he was playing a little place in Islington at the top of a little bar. And there was 30 people there, and he was sort of just milling about having a beer. Someone went up and talked to him, and he just sort of went away then. He was like, oh, I don't want this to be about me.
Yeah.
And then he had the thing of, then eventually he came back out for the second half of the thing, and he was just sort of standing next to me. So we were just having a beer, and every now and again, having a little yuck, just like, and then it was.
Yuck.
Yeah, just having a laugh and that and a little elbow and had this little moment. I was like, this is nice. I enjoy this.
Noel Fielding, friend of the show.
Friend of the show.
If you're listening to this, I hope you enjoyed your little yuck with Jimmy.
I said to Katie, there was just nothing at all happened. Like, didn't chatter anything, just had a little laugh and stuff together. But I said to Katie, I'm going to dine out on this fucking story for years.
Yeah, and now it's in your ears. So now wherever you are in the world, you now know that Jimmy had a yuck with Noel Fielding.
I've told as many people as possible.
And for those of you that aren't UK based, you're most probably googling who is Noel Fielding.
Oh, surely he's got it. Because Boosh was being in Oz. I loved it in high school and that, you know. It made my stony years in high school very enjoyable having the Boosh around.
Wow. And so, good.
Yeah, no, sorry. Yeah, that was a little, tangent there.
I was just trying to think how we can about it. Bring Boosh into. There's got to be a way of connecting Boosh to this. But, you know, I don't want to. So let's moving on. Thank you, Jimmy, for that anecdote.
Yeah, no. Always a pleasure to derail the show, mate.
Yeah. Speaking of derailing the show, I'm going to stop talking. Ghost stories, right? Yeah. We're getting back on track. Ghost stories.
Yeah, we're back.
So it's got Martin Freeman. That's how we got onto
that's
that.
That's how we went
it's
off
got
there.
Paul Whitehouse. Are you a fan of Paul Whitehouse? Do you know Paul Whitehouse from other things?
Paul Whitehouse. Who does he play in the...
He's the security guard.
Right. So, no, I don't. And that, he was... I was going to bring him up and point him out as a member of the cast because I think he... So it's Paul Whitehouse is his name.
Yeah.
He is fantastic in this. He is really, really good.
So he is a British treasure.
Okay.
He was, he's very, very funny man. Mainly does comedy sketch shows. You ever seen The Fast Show? Most probably not. If you don't know, you would know Paul Whitehouse. So seeing him in this role, I think, is another reason why it's so unnerving, because he's such a beautiful man. If anyone doesn't know who Paul Whitehouse is and want to be introduced to how beautiful he is, get onto BBC iPlayer and watch Mortimer and Whitehouse Go Fishing. It's just honestly
nice.
There's no better telly. It's just beautiful. seeing him in a horror role,
yeah,
and he's vulnerable in it as well.
That's what I was gonna say. He is so sensational because he's a hard man. He's a proper London geezer, takes no shit in this pub when you first introduce him. Then through a series of flashbacks you see what happened to this guy, and again he's still hard man, thinks people are fucking with him, but just slowly it's just chipping away at him, all these things going on, and like you say, that vulnerability comes through, and he's just fantastic. Absolutely fantastic.
So and the third and final story has a chap called Alex Lowther in it, who is an incredible actor, a young man. He's been in a few things, there's a TV show that he was in called End of the Fucking World.
Yep. So I've been trying to remember what else I know him from. I didn't Google him or anything on the bus over, which I probably could have, but I've definitely seen him in tons of other stuff as well. Like you say, very, very good.
He's
a bit disturbed, isn't he? Like his character in the... Not the man himself, but the character.
The thing is, all of the characters are unhinged by different reasons. I think, and those of you that haven't seen the film, there's a massive twist at the end.
Which obviously we're not going to talk about, but Yeah. We won't spoil the twist ending at all on this episode. Like, go and watch the movie for it, because it's so fucking good.
I kind of want to spoil it.
Just to ruin it for everyone.
Well, not to ruin it, but it's been out. It's one of these things where it's been out for a long time.
Yeah, and... but it's a cult one. I don't think it's one that people have seen. I think, yeah, there's people who are probably going to maybe listen to this and think, oh, I'll check that out. What,
you think us talking about it is going to make people want to run off and watch it?
Maybe one person. Maybe one person. I would like to think that we could recommend it to someone. So I wouldn't want to ruin it.
All right, we won't say that at the end... No, I'm not going to say it. All right, we'll stay away from the ending. You've twisted my arm.
Mickey okay. Mouse and Goofy and Donald Duck show up and save the day.
Right, and there's
that's what happens.
Well, there you go. We might as well tell them everything now. Yeah. Okay, so it's one of my favourites, and I'm very pleased we're watching it tonight. I haven't watched a good horror film for ages. I feel like horror has gone off the boil for me.
Yeah,
I went through a stage of loving it, and now I'm a little bit like. I've just seen it all before.
Right, sorry. So it's not so much that you're not liking the horror films that are coming out. It's just for you, the entire genre, like, it's not something that you've been dipping the toes into lately.
Not because
of the content being produced.
I think it's just nicer to have fun and, you know...
Not feel awful.
Yeah, I think the thing is, there's so much horrible stuff anyway, and then to sit and watch something horrible as well. It's just
true.
Whereas if you watch something like the Lego Movie...
Yeah.
You come away from it... buzzing your tits off.
Everything is awesome.
Everything is awesome. Never thought we'd be singing Everything is Awesome in our Ghost Stories episode.
Plug for like 4 or 5 episodes ago when we did the Lego Movie. Go listen to that one as well if you haven't.
I am trying to think of other things to talk about to do with this film without spoiling it, because the ending is such an integral part. One thing I will say about this film, which I thought was very funny for me personally, when I went and saw it at the theatre, there's a thing in it where a guy's feeding his baby cat food, and when he feeds the kid cat food, he says, "Daddy's got meow meow." And when I saw it and it first came out, they were selling little pin badges that said "Daddy's got meow meow" on it, just these, you know, the little ones. And I thought, got to have one of them, nice bit of memorabilia. So I worked in a school and I've got it on my school lanyard, and I'm wandering around school, and I didn't realise, but at that time, there was a fashionable drug going around called Meow Meow.
Very good.
So I'm wandering around the school, and very the kids good. Are all finding this very funny that Daddy's got Meow Meow, started calling me Daddy. I took it off my lanyard in the end, because Daddy didn't have Meow Meow. Daddy just has great taste in theatre.
You're strutting around thinking just like, yeah, Mr. A, the kids all love him, think he's real cool.
I never refer to myself as Mr. A. Mr. A-hole sometimes.
Yeah, Mr. takes it the A.
Oh, I really don't know. Anyway.
We might have to bleep that one.
we had such better content when I was drunk. Anyway, so yeah, Ghost Stories tonight. We're going to watch it. We've been recommended a drink to have with it, so this should liven us up. So a little shout out to the Spooky Sips podcast, a podcast where... three ladies sit down to watch horror films together, and then they enjoy a tipple based upon or that is appropriate for the film they're watching. So we sent them a little message just saying we're watching this tonight, and they have recommended us something that sounds quite frankly horrific.
Yeah, a ghost cocktail that is, it's made of heavy cream, sugar syrup, vanilla essence, vodka, and soda water, or as they call it in North America, club soda. I mean, I am hoping to be pleasantly surprised, but not going to lie, this sounds horrendous. And you said before we started recording, and I tend to agree with you, that this is probably a stitch-up.
Yeah, well, we will find out soon. So we're going to go off now and make one of these horrific-sounding cocktails. It might be delicious.
I hope so. I really hope it is.
Either way, I'm not sure that the cream will sit too well on the vodka and the chicken that's already in my tummy, but we'll find out.
Yeah.
So, we'll be back soon. So, go and make yourself a drink.
Just get yourself comfortable. Or if you want, go off and watch the movie, and then you can come back and we can spoil the ending for you.
Oh yeah, let's spoil the ending.
Yeah, okay, all right, you know what, we're warning people now. We're going to say the second, like the end of this episode is going to be very spoiler heavy with us talking about the end of the film, so if you don't want it ruined, you've been warned. Go and watch the fucking thing if you want.
Swearing, Jimmy.
Sorry. I'll just these fucking people, mate. They wire me up. They expect so much from us. You fucking vultures.
Ladies and gentlemen, my name is Professor Philip Goodman. I'm here today to share three apparently supernatural incidents with you, all of which seem deeply troubling.
Hello? Is anyone there?
The spirit. The unquiet spirit.
Quiet's a room. Nobody's home.
No, you're still there.
You don't believe, do you?
The brain sees what it wants to see. My job is to try and untangle the truth from the fiction.
Maria?
Wait.
I don't like it.
You don't know everything, do you?
Well, that was as good as I remembered it.
Yep. Bleak. It's a pretty downer ending.
Yes,
maybe let's not jump straight into the ending. We can get there, but I mean, it's bleak.
It does, mate. Like, I was thinking, oh, I'm not going to drink tonight, apart from obviously that beautiful drink. Thank you. Thank you very much for that. But yeah, I had to have a little wine. It's depressing fucking film.
It's so tough, man. It's so tough. I mean, I feel like we can probably talk. We've probably got a good bit to say about the ending, so maybe...
Well, the thing is, we've got a lot. But the one thing we did notice is so much of the just. It's such a clever film,
yeah.
And we could go into loads of detail about it, but this podcast would end up being hours long.
Yeah. And to be honest, we'd have to watch it another fucking 10 times, I think, to actually get everything in there. There's so many little things just in the background, isn't there? Like,
yeah, I think that's the thing. It's one of those films where you get joy out of. Watching it again and again, because you do spot new things every time.
Yeah.
And, you know, and if we were to tell you what all of them were, it would kind of ruin it for you.
Totally. That's it. And if, you know, and if you're listening to this episode and went and watched this for the first time, go and watch it again. Because it's even better once you know the ending to go back through the entire thing again and just spotting all these little things. But we... Like, maybe just to get it out of the way first, one thing that we didn't like, both of us, as we're watching, that we said is, like, so in the film there's three different stories of, like, people's paranormal encounters. They're all very, very tense and very scary until the last 10 to 20 seconds when you sort of just get shown everything and it kind of just all falls a bit flat.
Yeah, I mean, the first one, for example, there's like in a warehouse,
yep.
And it's all dark, and he's got a torch, and then there's a little girl. I didn't get the relevance of the little girl.
Oh, I've got a theory about that, so...
Oh, let's go for it then.
Yeah, all right.
So let me just a bit of context, though. In the warehouse, the security guard, he hears... you know, a little girl calling, and then at the end he shines a torch and the little girl comes to him, hugs him and asks him if he's her daddy. And the only thing that confused me was the fact that when they were chatting in the cafe and he asked, do you have any kids, Paul Whitehouse gets really angry and goes, mind your own fucking business. Mm-hmm. So there must be a story somewhere about that, a kid.
Yep, and then it turned out his daughter was catatonic and she had lock-in syndrome, which is what actually our main character has.
Right.
The professor. So our main character. So I guess actually we might actually have to talk about the ending for all this to make sense. So basically...
Okay, spoiler.
This is where the spoilers are coming now. So you have been warned thoroughly. Basically, the end of the film, it turns out that this guy...
Andy Nyman. The main guy.
Yeah, the main character of the film. He is comatose and completely... what they call it, lock-in syndrome. Mm-hmm. Completely trapped in his own body, but his brain's still working in a hospital bed.
It's all in his mind.
Yeah, from a failed suicide attempt, and he's being haunted by the horrible thing that happened to him when he was a teenager, where some bullies tricked a what would be the word for the kid who they got?
Well, I would say...
Not troubled.
No, he obviously had some kind of special needs.
Yeah.
I think... You know, they portrayed him as being what would be called simple, but
yeah.
I don't think
that's what, yeah, the appropriate term. I couldn't think of the word. Yeah, I couldn't think of the word. But like, not troubled, but yeah. That's anyway. So they trick this kid to go into a storm drain, into an aqueduct, and he has like an asthma attack or a seizure and dies in there. And Andy Nyman's character didn't do anything to save him, and he's been living with that grief ever since. And
yeah, I think the thing is, like, we could get really into the deep dive on this, and I feel like we should skirt around a lot of it because otherwise this is going to be incredibly long. It's quite serious content as well.
Just very quickly, when you said about what the connection to the girl was, what that was. So this is my little theory, and I will just skirt around the whole thing just very quickly, is that there's three cases that he has to investigate in the film. Each of those are three things that his own personal guilt that are racking him with. So the first part with the little girl is the estrangement that he had from his sister, who was very close. Like you see in the family videos, you see his home movies at the beginning of the film. Yeah. He's very close to his sister. They then became, something happens with them. I can't remember whether she becomes estranged or what it is, but she's not in his life anymore. So he's alone there with that.
Sorry, the reason I went all weird then is because I could hear all this noise, but it's just my wife coming out of the bathroom, and I couldn't work out where the noise was coming from. Sorry, it's Joey, a
haunting.
Carry on.
No, it's a haunting. That's what it is.
Calling my wife a ghost.
So the first one with the little girl, and that is the guilt that he has from losing his sister and the contact that he
when
had
do
with
we
her
know that his sister's dead, though?
I don't even know if she's dead, but she's not around anymore.
Right.
Like, you don't see her anywhere. Again, this is just a theory as well that I just sort of put together watching it. The second one, so the second story is about a really nervous young kid who has a really hard time with his parents, which you also see. He has a really hard time with his dad and his folks, which is something he's also wrestled with the whole time. And this is also when he goes into the house. That's when you see there's a hooded character following him. That's where you see him in a frame for the first time, which is the kid who goes into the storm drain.
Right.
He then gets attacked by a literal demon in the forest. It's literally him facing up to his demons. And then the third one is a really successful banker who ordered a family and trashed everything. That's him wrestling with the idea of not having a family and nothing like that, because he just threw himself into his career as an investigator and destroyed any chance he could have had at happiness with a family, and he did that. And I think those are just three levels of his psyche just like coming back at him that he's trying to wrestle with.
They certainly all fit.
Yeah. I mean, it's just a theory, it's just a reading. Like, you could throw anything at it, but to me all three of those make sense.
Yeah. I think let's talk about I don't know where to go with that.
There is no way to go. It was just that was just an observation I made, and just the point that I sort of wanted to make. And it was also as well, then there's several times in the film where he is describing people in the case or describing the old man, the professor who gives him the cases at the beginning. And he's actually describing himself, and he's doing it in a really negative way, and that's his brain like reconciling with himself the things he hates about himself while he's dying in this fucking hospital bed.
Well, I'll keep it light. Jesus.
Hey, how can you keep it light?
You can't keep it right. Like, I mean, you could keep it light. Like, yeah. there was some lighthearted moments.
There's some good bits of levity in there.
I think there was a bit that I laughed at. I'm desperately trying to remember it, just bring some.
Well, there's a bit when the kid's getting trapped out in the car and can't get any phone service, and he's blaming O2. Yeah. That's quite a funny one. Like,
and also there's a bit where Alex Lauber is playing this kid. He's broken down in his car and he's in the middle of the woods, and it's implied that he's run over the devil. And,
yeah.
The devil has got into the back of his car, and you see the hand reach onto his shoulder and as he's trying to get out, and the devil goes, "Stay." And then he goes, "Ah, fuck that."
Takes off running. Yeah,
starts running. But then he gets Evil Dead referenced. He got raped by a tree or something.
And there was a real nice Evil Dead reference where the POV of the demons charging through the forest, where it's the camera just swooping through the forest really quickly. That was really nice. That was a nice touch. I enjoyed that.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to know if that was a deliberate.
It has to be. It's like when we were watching it, you know, I said to you, like, I think if you're doing anything in spooky woods now and you're putting the fog and everything out, I think it's kind of it's expected that you got to do a little Evil Dead nod.
Yeah. I mean, this film is incredible. But I have to say, watching it again today, there was a few bits that did spoil it. And I think the beauty of the stage show was that it ramped you up, and then it hit you with a fear, and then it stopped.
Yeah.
Whereas here, for example, with the security guard and the little girl, you got this, oh my god, that was really scary, really tense, really uncomfortable, and then you're like, oh, it's still going, and I wish it would stop now, because now I'm just staring at the telly and I've lost all my fear.
This is it, right?
And it's the same in the woods when he's got like that bit where he's, you know, you've hit something with your car, you drive away, your car breaks down, you're terrified. That's so tense and so scary.
And you can hear the sounds out in the woods as well, like this weird growling and gurgling.
And all of a sudden you get like a hooved creature running around on the top of your car. And and as a watcher, I'm like, okay, here we go. And there's just another generic.
Yeah, and I am happy because they did it as practical effects, which is great, and it looked good, but you're also watching it just being like, that's just a dude in a bit of a pan costume, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Not even a good one. Like, when he was laying down on the floor, he just looked like a chicken.
Like, to be fair, they probably spent most of the budget getting Martin Freeman.
Yeah. Well, do you know what was scarier than his costume? That fucking cocktail that we had to drink.
Oh, yeah, that was awful. That was the worst thing ever been, honestly. Nope. when you were saying about that first bit as well, with the tension totally going, like the claw marks on the generator, was a bit hokey, and then.
But it's such a clever film, and everything links back to everything.
Oh yeah,
that I kind of feel like I'm trying to work out what the scratch marks can be, because they can't. They're not just random. They didn't just go, oh, people will find this scary because they're scratch marks. Is it the devil? Is the devil there in the? Is the devil the little girl? Like,
yeah, maybe.
I do kind of need to watch it again.
This is it,
because
right?
The scratch marks, you know, don't appear in anything else. But then also it's silly things like the tree coming alive and grabbing the
what
boy.
Was that?
And then it's like, but then how did he get the car back?
Yeah.
And did the rescue people turn up and he's just sat there with his car, like,
just traumatized? Yeah,
it's a horrible story, but I kind of feel like him getting out of the story would almost be better than him getting into it.
Yeah,
like, how
definitely.
Did he get home? Was he rescued? Like, you know, surely if they're investigating, they could talk to the guy that, or girl who came to fix his car. And
but I suppose if you
give me answers, motherfucker.
But I think as well, if you're going to look at it from what the narrative actually is, in terms of this is like a brain that's, you know, on the verge of dying from a man trying to self-asphyxiate himself in his car, so it's this brain's like last kicks of thing, like it's the brain's last kicks showing him this story that he wants, so it doesn't have to make sense.
Ooh.
I guess, and it doesn't have, you only
know what
he wants to know out of the story. It doesn't matter how he got rescued, because it didn't happen.
Do you know what I've just realised? So if he was trying to kill himself in the car through asphyxiation, he would have wanted to kill himself, so he wanted him to stay in the car, but his logical brain made him leave the car.
Yeah.
So in a way, is he Alex Lowther in the car going, And the devil's him trying to kill himself, and the
pretty
devil's
much
saying, stay in the car.
Yeah.
And he's going, no, fuck that.
There you go.
Whoa, this film.
Yeah, there you go.
This film. Mm-hmm. I know
that's
we're jumping around
good.
An awful lot, but it's just what it does to you. It's such a cleverly made film.
That's a good little... I like that. That's a really good way of looking at that.
I like that a lot. I think that makes so much sense.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Like I say, I'm quite certain that those three cases are all different parts of his psyche and different like things of guilt that he has that he's trying to wrestle with as that last thing. But I will also say as well, one of the most terrifying things in that film is at the big crescendo when his brain at the big finale when his brain finally accepts what's going on, and so the boy who died in the tunnel is now back in his brain, but is like zombified and all
zombified.
Mucky and rotten.
Zombified.
All mucky and rotten from being in this damp sewer, and is like laughing at him and teasing him like, this is it. And he rips his clothes off and he has a He rips the main character's clothes off, and he has a
sexy.
Get into bed. He has a
literally.
He literally does. He has a hospital gown on underneath, and he realizes, you know, oh no, no, and like that's his brain accepting it, and it's the word. It's what he says to him. Then he looks at him. He says, "Please, not again. I don't want to go back." And the zombified kids at the end of the hall pointing at the bed, at the hospital bed, saying, "You're going to get back in now." And he's saying, "No, please, I don't want to go back." That means that he has been doing this on a constant loop, and he has now remembered again. And he's like, "I don't want to go back because we're going to do this again." So it's just constantly happening over again.
Well, it's a little bit like the bowl of petunias in Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, and they come into existence, and the only thing that goes through their mind is, "Oh no, not again."
Yeah. Well, yeah, yeah.
No, maybe
Martin Freeman.
Maybe he is a bowl of petunias.
Well, I mean, yeah. But I mean, by the logic, you know, in terms of the logic and stuff of Hitchhiker's Guide, you know, it's entirely possible, isn't it?
Yeah.
But no, like, that is the most terrifying part. Like, that ending of the thing of just he has to do this again and again. And then everything that's been happening through the movie, there's all these little parts of the film are all just in his hospital room around him.
It does. I mean, even above the bed in the hospital room, there was a photo of the road going through the forest. I don't know if you noticed that.
I didn't. No. Oh, that's nice.
Yeah,
that's good. Yeah, and there's like the voices. There's some weird voices come through a radio in the first case of the Night Watchman in his little office, and you don't really know what the hell it's about. These two people just talking out of context, and then you realise it's a conversation being had by two doctors over his bed at the end of the film. Like, it's
I'm so glad we watched that.
Yeah, and you know, and like you said, so many things that just keep coming back through it. There's like the dead bird, there's a dead like rotten sort of seagull that's always through it. One thing that I'd noticed tonight for the first time that I mentioned to you several times is like the main character is Jewish, and as far as we're aware watching it, nobody else is. And several characters, when they're talking to him or around him, use Yiddish or like Hebrew phrases, which they wouldn't do. Like, that's his brain just putting these things in, building this world. Like, it's so clever. It's so, so clever.
Wow.
And it's shot beautifully too.
I mean, it looks amazing.
It's so
beautiful.
There's
a couple of moments
shot.
Where they're a little bit ropey with the subtle CGI, but
we'll let
them off that.
Absolutely,
we'll let them off that for the good entertainment value of such a lovely film.
There's a great shot of Martin Freeman at his bar, and there's like,
yeah, you really liked that, didn't you?
It was just so beautifully composed, man. Of just like, there was three big lamps hanging on the ceiling, and then like five chairs underneath, and they had the camera perfect level with the bar. He was sitting on the middle seat underneath the middle light, and they just had some flowers and stuff on each side, and he was just sitting there, and they held on that shot for like, you know, 10 seconds of him just having a drink. It wasn't needed, but they obviously composed that shot and went, yeah, 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 just that, let's sit on this, right. This looks really good. It was a nice one. And there's that beautiful transition as well when he's in the caravan towards the end, and he realises that nothing's the way it's meant to be, because Martin Freeman's character had killed himself 10 minutes ago. All of a sudden, he's back in front of him now, and they do it.
Another spoiler there, but you, to be honest, we should have said it first.
Yeah. And, I mean, come on.
Everything's exactly as it seems.
And they've slowly, as the scene's going on, between him and Martin Freeman talking, it's extreme close up, so both their faces jumping back and forth as they talk, but they're slowly pulling the background out of focus, and then when it comes back into focus, it's now just like a matte painting print behind them. But because you haven't clocked it, you still think it's 3D until Martin Freeman turns around and he's like, "See, it's all just fake," and he just puts his finger through the wall and just tears it open. Like, literally, he's mind breaking. Like, it's amazing.
There's the thing is with that, there's the cinematography, like quite often in films you just don't notice it, but with that one, because it's so clever, you know, it's I'm a bit sad that they didn't use Meow Meow in it.
Does he not when he's feeding him he's feeding Barty the baby, the horribly disfigured baby?
Well, we assume he's horribly disfigured.
Well, yeah, we're told
we don't actually see it,
yeah,
or it. But we know that it shits itself because the blanket was covered in shit.
Yeah, and hanging down like full of it.
Yeah, which isn't pleasant.
And he had a, and like, because he was holding it, he was holding, like, Martin Freeman's holding the bub like, and it's a normal sized baby, but then it had that huge elongated arm sort of appendage. You could see it under the sheet because Martin Freeman like swings it over his shoulder.
Oh really?
And it's like twice as long as what the body
and
should
it was
be.
Definitely his arm, because you know the phrase, like, it's like a baby's arm.
Yeah, it was I did say appendage at first. I said arm. That's why I said whatever the appendage is. The
baby's got a huge appendage. Now there's a badge you don't wear at a school.
That's not one you're taking with you, mate. That is not one you're taking.
Well, I think that was a successful little movie.
Yeah, absolutely, man. It was, yeah, it's really good. It's and, really good.
Yeah, I think it's up there. I very much enjoyed it.
It's one of those ones as well where, like, I enjoyed watching it tonight, and then, like we say, going back through and trying to pick all the little things up. Oh, sorry, man, I'm pouring you.
Yeah, just having a massive yawn.
Yeah, I'll shut up.
Yeah. Fuck off, Jimmy.
Going through and finding all the little things again. But I am in no way... going to rush out and watch that again now, because that is so depressing. That
it's such a depressing movie.
God, I'm. What's the show again? Sorry, Thingy and Mortimer Go Fishing.
Oh, White House and Mortimer.
Mortimer Go Fishing. I'm going to go home and watch an episode of that on YouTube before I go to bed, just to try and put myself
on
in a better mental.
All free on iPlayer.
Beautiful. There you go. Yeah, yeah. And I'm going to put myself in a better mental.
I think that's how we should end this. Like, if you watch this film, just get on iPlayer straight afterwards. Yeah. Paul Whitehouse, Bob yep. Mortimer Goes Fishing.
Yep.
Well, I think in summary of that film, it's absolutely fucking brilliant.
Yeah.
Excellently acted, yep. Excellently filmed, excellently written.
Yep.
Can't fault it, apart from dragging out the scares a bit.
Yeah, yeah, and just showing too much. And you know, and it's a minor gripe, because up until that point, it's so fucking good.
Yeah,
and everything else makes up for it, dude. Like, you forget about those little things by the end of the finale.
Yeah,
by the end of that third act, you don't give a fuck.
I don't think we'll be able to find a decent quote for it, though. It's not a very quotable film, is it?
Stay.
It's more a word than a quote.
What about Daddy's Got Yum Yums?
Yeah, but they didn't say it in the film, and it's meow meows.
Yeah, true.
Yum yum. He's been to Greg's. Daddy's got Greg's yum yums.
Oh, fuck, I want some Greg's.
Oh, Greg's breakfast is amazing.
It's the best.
I think I can't think of... there's not really any sort of good quotes, so maybe we just quote... there you go. Things are exactly as they seem.
There you go.
Is it as they seem or as they see? No,
things are exactly as they seem. Yeah.
So, yeah.
There you go.
Just remember, things are exactly as they seem.
Always.
And on that note, thank you so much for listening to us talk bollocks about a film again. Yeah. Other podcasts are available, but none of them will bore you quite as much as we will.
We've got that real special, that real nice.
We know how to hit your sweet spot of just listen to our bollocks.
Some people like the G-spot tickled. We hit the Z-spot, just put you to sleep.
Oh, that was cute.
Thanks, yeah, that's pretty good.
Now I'm just picturing people's G-spots.
Lovely.
Why do you always have to throw something out like that, right? I was just saying a really sincere goodbye.
I don't know what's wrong with me, man. I'm sorry.
Right.
Maybe I'll go self-asphyxiate myself in a car.
Wow. Well, luckily, Jimmy drives an electric car.
I drive an electric, so I'm fine. Yeah,
so I'll have to lend him my keys. On that note,
some hosepipe. No, that's not funny. Thank you so much for dropping in. If you want to follow us on any of our socials, please do. It's all at Rich and Jimmy Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all the good stuff, and on YouTube now as well. Hello to everyone there. We're waving at the camera if you're listening, and obviously just keep listening. Like, share, review, send it to your friends, you know, write into your local paper, tell them about it. Anything you can, really, spread the word.
And if you do get a chance to tune into Spooky Sips, it might be worth a good little listen.
Yeah, they've great.
Got nice voices, good banter, and they like horror films. So. Yeah.
And you'll get hopefully some better drink recipes than we did from them.
Yeah, if they ever recommend you a drink, though, stay well away from it, because that shit is foul.
Terrible, just the worst.
Thank you so much, bye-bye.
Bye-bye, big love.
Fucking weirdo.